Today's class is called Standing Naked Before God, and it's based upon Hopi Vastraharan Lila from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. I have gathered various facts from the writings of Jiva Goswami, the commentaries of Vishnam Chakravarti Thakur, and from Padu Kanapur, who's Ananda Vrindavan Chakur. And two statements from Sanatana Goswami and a statement of our acharyas. So kind of filled out the pastime with more details. Okay, one more picture. Since we're going to be giving this lila, I just request that nobody come in or go out or just kind of sit quietly. No questions till the end. Okay? It's just hear the lila, that's all. Don't try to analyze anything. Just hear it. That's it. Put your intellect on vacation and ego and all that things. So the gopis had developed a love for Krishna. They wanted Krishna as their husband. The gopis headed by Dhaniya Sakhi. They hadn't met Krishna yet, but they were developing love for him. So this is a kind of love and separation before meeting Krishna called Purva Radha. Radha means attachment and Purva means prior to meeting. So Charyas, Rupa Goswami has mentioned there's four kinds of love and separation. Purva Radha, then Maan, then Prema Vaichitya, and Prabhas. These four kinds. So, we can see that Rukmini also developed the Purva Radha. She heard about Krishna and she fell in love with him just by hearing about him. And that's important for us because that is our situation. That shows that possibility is there for us as well. Prema Vaichitya means love, feeling separation from the beloved, even though he's sitting right next to you and maybe embracing you. And there's the famous Leela of Radha and Krishna and Madhu Mangal at Prema Sarovara. Maybe you've heard that before. Mumblebee comes into the clinch. And Radharani's a little disturbed and she's afraid of the bee, and so she's waving it away, and Madhu Mangal chases it away out, and then he comes back and says, "Don't worry, Madhusudan is gone." Madhusudan meaning the bee. And then she hears it like this, you know, Madhusudan's gone, and she enters into this kind of state of insanity called Prema Vaichitya, divine insanity. And she begins crying, like, "Oh, Madhusudan, my Krishna, my Priyatan, he's gone." And then Krishna looks at her, and she loves me so much, and he begins crying, he becomes touched. And then their tears join together and create this Prem Sarovara Kunt. Yeah, it's a famous lila in Vrindavan. Then the next kind of love in separation, well, we should mention Maan, right? Maan means kind of divine indignation or spiritual anger or jealousy. Like when a wife gets angry at her husband and the husband says, "Oh, darling, please," and she just, you know, turns her head and just stops speaking with him. So that means that their love is separated now from her mood of anger. And of course, you know, Radharani enters into this mood a lot. And Krishna comes and he says, "Please forgive me, I didn't mean that." He bows down, touches her feet, and she just turns around. She turns around like this. So that happens a lot in Vrindavan. And Prabhas means when the beloved goes away. and this physical proximity is gone, and the physical separation is there. But when Krishna goes to tend the cows, then there's this pravas, vipralamba bhav, because all the gopis and everyone in Vrindavan, they feel separation. And then when he goes far away, like to Mathura, then it's called dur pravas. In the spiritual world, there's no dur pravas, because Krishna doesn't go far away. But there's pravas, nonetheless. It does go to the fields to tend the cows. And if you read Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you see how intense the feeling of love is. The gopis get stunned, Mani Shoda becomes stunned, you know, crying. It's very intense. But Krishna still does go to Mathura, but he comes back after a few days. He kills Kamsa periodically, and then comes back to Vrindavan. So there's 2 or 3 days he's gone, not more than that. So the gopis, they felt this poor Radha, this kind of love. They wanted Krishna as their husbands, and they tried to supplicate various deities, worshipping them, but they felt dismayed because of the apparent lack of any results. Nothing was happening. And they would meet each other by the Jamuna. And none of them were revealing their secret love for Krishna. Nobody knew about each other's feelings of love. If someone has some love, he may or she may keep it secret. But if another person has the same love, then she may detect that. She can understand that. So they were bound by the Jamuna, and gradually, as they began to reveal each other, their hearts to one another, and they began weeping. And then at that very moment, Vrindadevi came there, dressed as a female ascetic, like a yogini or something, wearing white. And so the gopis, they greeted her and very respectfully, and she accepted their greeting, and she began to speak to them. She said that, I live here in the forest, and I couldn't help but see how much you're suffering due to your love. And this has created such a mood in my heart. I feel so compassionate for you that I have to come here. So please now listen to the mystic, magical rituals that I will present to you, by which you will be able to relieve your heart's desires, and your desires will be fulfilled. It's not very difficult. You simply have to perform this for 1 month. I received these rituals from Yogamaya after performing austerities myself and pleasing her. So then she initiated the gopis. Vrindadevi is the guru of the gopis. So she initiated them with the mantra Katyayani Mahamaye Yogin Adishvri Mahayogin Adishvri Nanda Gopa Sukham Devi Patime Kurute Namaha. She whispered this into their ears, and so they became initiated. So if you want, you can repeat this, and you'll all enter into the mood of the gopis. Katyayani Mahamaye
Katyayani Mahamaye
Mahayoginyadishwari
Mahayoginyadishwari
Nandagopasutam Devi
Nandagopasutam Devi
Patime Kurute Namaha. And so now you're all initiated, part of the GBC, GBC members, Gopi Baba Club. They're all love. So, so then she disappeared. And so the gopis were quite amazed by all this. Wow. Okay, they immediately began to implement her instructions. So she gave them, you know, a procedure to kind of augment the mantra. And they went home. And their, you know, it was understood that they were going to do this worship, and they had this idea. Their mothers were very concerned, and actually the mothers wanted them to get married, as all mothers do for young girls, especially in India. And the mothers were a little bit concerned, though, because they thought that, how are you going to perform these severe austerities? You're with your fragile young bodies will never endure these austerities. And we've never seen you have this kind of determination before. And they began to ask them, who will you worship, Uma or Umapati? Or maybe Lord Brahma? Will you need some wealth for performing this worship? And who will be your guiding priest to guide you through the Vedic hymns? So you please consider all these things and then let us know. So the gopis, they only told their mothers that we're going to worship Kalyani, Vas. That's all they said. Because the girls were afraid that if they began speaking about all of these things, that they would kind of slip up and their secret love of Krishna would be revealed. So they just kind of kept it quiet. But they had a whole plan. They understood what they were going to do. Every day they were going to eat simply rice and dal without spices and havishan. Every day, once a day only. And they would wake up early in the morning and go to the Jamuna and bathe. And that was in the Hemant season, it was beginning of winter, so it was cold, quite cold. And then they would worship Kalyani on the banks of the Jamuna. So that was their plan. And during this time, their bodies took on a special type of beauty, which was not seen before. Because along with those austerities, they also decided not to use any oil on their body or hair. Now, Western ladies maybe don't realize the intense austerity of this, but if you live in India, you can understand, because your skin gets very dry. And they also decided not to chew any betel or pan, so the natural view of their lips was visible. And so in this way, their bodies took on a special kind of hue or glow at that time. And they also were eating once a day, so they became very thin. And they lost their natural, their usual glow. They had a different type of effulgence. So they decided, actually the Vrijavasis, when they saw them like that, they felt pity for them, because they were becoming thin and so forth. They're young girls. Actually, they're only 5 years old. Yeah. They're Vrajakumaris. Vrajakumaris. Krishna was 6 years old at this time, because it was the year before he lived over downhill. And then he performed the Rasa dance. That was the following year. He was 7. So they were very young. But in India, young girls, they get married then. And they think about getting married when they're very young. So they would wake up early. Actually, their burning desire to obtain Krishna forced them to wake up in the middle of the night. They couldn't sleep at night. But before they tried to retire for the evening, they would meet and they would make a plan. Tomorrow we'll meet this time. We'll go to this part of the Jamuna. Okay. And they would make a plan. This was secretly done, of course. So they would meet in the next morning, and they would very respectfully greet each other and warmly embrace. And sometimes one of them was late, so they would call out, "Oh, fortunate girl, why are you wasting time? Please come now." And they would all come together and they would hold hands and walk to the Jhumna singing songs. And those songs were kind of teasing each other by exposing their own goals in song. Actually, Jiva Goswami describes their song, something like glorifying Krishna. Krishna is the beautiful with the forest garland and lightning like dhoti, shark shaped earrings, and you will marry him, O Sakhi. Like this. And all of Krishna's, they will ride on a cart, and Krishna will be followed by thousands of his friends, play musical instruments, and from your home, when you hear this sound, your heart will flutter in excitement. And then they'll bring him to the wedding pavilion, and Nanda Baba and all his friends will come, and then your parents will bring you there, and they'll hold your hands together and pour turmeric water over. And this way they were describing the wedding to happen in the future. And this way they were like mocking or kind of teasing each other by exposing each other's desires in the song. And they held hands and walking on the forest path to the Jhumna, and they appeared like a lightning bolt moving on the earth because of their effulgence. So they approached the Jhumna, and Jhumna Devi could directly perceive their desires. She welcomed them with her waves and said, "Welcome, Sakis, come, come." And she was desiring to embrace them. So they came to the Jhumna and they threw off their woolen chadars and they were shivering and sighing. And they giggled and squinted at one another, noticing that their friends were also cold. Their lips quivered and revealed their jasmine bud-like teeth. And their teeth were chattering in the cold. They offered their obeisances to Jhumna before entering, but they made a comic scene by slapping their arms and contorting their legs in a humorous fashion because of the cold. And then they bravely dove into the Jhumna. Then quickly came out. And they ran gleefully up the banks of the Jhumna, feeling victorious, having faced her icy waters. So coming out, they dried themselves with soft cloths. And they looked very beautiful as they were drying themselves. And their beauty was enhanced by the sweet names of Krishna, which was emanating from their mouths. And the sweet aroma of their mouths attracted bumblebees, which hovered around their faces. But the gopis became annoyed and became twitching and blinking their eyes because the little bumblebees were making more grease with their little wings. So then they... Then Suryadev gradually arose and helped to disperse their cold. And in this way, he showed more affection for the gopis than he did for his own daughter, Jhumna Devi. Then the gopis decided to do the puja. So they chose a very pristine place on the banks of the Jhumna that was not hampered by any foam or any footprints of animals or any birds even. It was a very beautiful and clean, secluded place. And they began to fashion the deity made from sand. So there's Kadyayani. They would make every day from sand. And while they were fashioning the deity, they were praising Krishna in different songs and verses. And even before they invoked the deity's presence into the murti, they felt that Kadyayani was already present somehow, and that made them feel excited and that they were already on the way to success. So they One of them asked, are we going to worship Katyayini separately or all together? Because we should decide now, because we don't want to make any mistakes. Another gopi answered, oh, we should worship her all together, because to worship separately is not good. And they all agreed, yes. And then they began. So they started the puja by chanting the mantra to invoke the deity's presence. And they said, please come, Devi. Please come and accept this murti. Please help us to come closer to Krishna. We offer our obeisances to you. And after welcoming her by bathing her feet with water, then they offered Achman, Madhuparka, and Arya, these sweet items they offered to her. And they prayed to taste the sweetness of Krishna's lips. And they worshipped Katyayini in a very elaborate way, offering many, many articles. And they were expressing their desires while they did so. Like they had a very beautiful sari with golden thread woven throughout. And they said, please, Devi, please accept this beautiful golden sari. And please arrange that our clothes will be exchanged with Krishna's. And then they offered some oils, like fragrant oils, like aguru, camphor, and musk oil. And they said, please, Devi, anoint yourself with these wonderful oils. And please anoint our limbs with the limbs of the son of Nanda. And then they offered jewels and ornaments. And they said, please adorn yourself with these jewels and ornaments. And please adorn us with the nectar of Krishna's limbs. And they offered chandan and incense and flowers and ghee lamps. And they offered fruit and betel nut and milk, bananas and coconuts. And they also offered mung dal and different kinds of cakes floating in sugar and rice, and rock candy. And then they began to decorate her with different flowers and leaves that they picked from fresh from the trees. They offered more clothing and more ornaments and cooked food like malpur and amrita keli and sweetbreads, things like that that they had brought from their homes that they had cooked the night before. And they said, please accept all these offerings, dear Katyayini, and please bestow upon us the remnants from the lotus mouth of the ever-youthful Krishna. And then they chanted with great feeling the mantra, Katyayini Maha Mahe, Maha Yogi Yanishwa. So that is, O Goddess Katyayini, O great potency of the Lord, O possessor of mystic power and controller of all, please make the son of Nanda my husband. I offer my humble obeisances unto you. So Katyayini then might object that, well, what do you want from me? You should be allowed to marry whomever you want. I shall simply inspire your parents to arrange the marriage. Therefore, you should not say kurute, but karyate. That you should arrange this. But anticipating the gopis, they spoke this verse in great anxiety. And they said, well, our connection with him should immediately be arranged. We're very anxious and we cannot wait any longer. Besides, Krishna has not taken his initiation yet, and he's not ready for marriage. So please, Goddess, without any formal ceremony, please make him our husband just by the Gandharva rite. As you know, in Manusmita, there's eight kinds of marriages. Right? The Gandharva rite is not a very high level. It's like the fourth or fifth. And they get progressively worse. But the, you know, or less sophisticated and cultured. The last one is called Paishachi, and the man marries a woman like when she's intoxicated, sleeping. And the first one is Brahma. That's, you know, when everything's paka arrangement, when the father chooses the girl, and then they don't see each other before the wedding, they meet at the wedding, and then there's a dowry given, and everything's, you know, formal. This is for brahmanas and high-class people. And then there's a kind of going down, arsha, prajapatya, like this, and asura. Asura is where the man kind of pays the father, you know, kind of like buys off the daughter, like this. Because it's the daughter's family supposed to give the money, but in this case, it's kind of like a mafia style. And Gandharvas, you know, when Krishna also did that, he came and he stole Rukmini, right? So now this is the kind of wedding that they're hoping that Gandharvas just by touching them, they're married. Then they embrace. That's more romantic marriage, which is the basic marriage in the West nowadays, right? Probably the only one, except for maybe Paishatya. The last one. So the goddess said, but how can your desire to have intimate association with Krishna happen without your parents even knowing about it? So the gopis replied, Mahamaya, that by the power of Maya, Kanyayani Mahamaya. By your great illusory power, you should bewilder our parents so they don't know anything about this. And they should not be able to discern the secret of our association with Krishna. But anyway, the status of having a husband is not dependent only on having a formal marriage, so please make this arrangement. Here, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments that actually Kalyani was not Mahamaya, but Yogamaya. Of course, the gopis are pure devotees and they don't have any connection with any demigods. So they're actually worshipping Yogamaya to have a connection with Krishna. So after they're performing their arti and finishing the prayers, the gopis offer their obeisances and then they offer the deity into the Jamuna. And they would do this every day. So all month they kept their enthusiasm and actually they even increased their standard. Their standards, in other words, they began bringing more and more items and offering more puja for Kalyani. And just before the end of the month, they all got a kind of mystic revelation or the mercy of Kalyani who came to them and spoke to them all, either in dream or while awake during the day. And she said, "Oh, girls, you are the topmost attraction of Krishna's conjugal love. And it's obvious by your prayers, your sincere desire to serve Krishna. And your prayers will also make me glorious as well. So please continue in this way and you will have Krishna's association very soon. So now you can stop your austerities." This was a few days before the end of the month. So now, on the last day, they became very encouraged because of this revelation of Kalyani. And on the last day, which is in Purnima, they all decided to take their final bath. And they all had the same desire. And they invited their special friend, the daughter of Rishabhanu, along with her friends, to accompany them that morning. So it means that Srimati Radharani was not with them daily, but she only, by their request, because they all loved her so much, they all wanted her to come and celebrate the joyous final bath in the morning. So Srimati Radharani and her friends, Alita and Vishaka, Chitra, Champakalata, Tungavidya, Induleka, Rangadevi, Sudevi, they all suddenly come. So this is a very important point, actually, because it makes it clear that one cannot meet Krishna without getting the mercy of Radharani. And Krishna himself told this to Narada very emphatically. He said in the Narada Purana, it's mentioned that, or Naradiya Purana, Krishna said, Satyam Satyam Puram Satyam Satyam Eva Puna Punaha Vina Radha Prasadena Mat Prasada Na Jayate. He says, I'm telling you the truth, I'm telling you the truth, the truth, the truth. I say it again and again. Without the mercy of Srimati Radharani, one can never attain my mercy. So this fact is established in this pastime. But there's a further esoteric point, and that is that one cannot enter into Vrajalila without being escorted or ushered by the eternal residents of Vrindavan. Because these young girls had taken birth in Vrindavan with spiritual bodies, and they had prema bhakti. But still, they couldn't enter into Krishna's pastimes without being ushered into by Radharani and her friends. And Prabhupada mentions this point in his commentary to the 9th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. I'll just read that for you. This is 10.9.21. Prabhupada writes, the Vrindavan Vasis, Mother Yashoda, Krishna's friends and Krishna's gopis with whom he dances, have all very intimate relationships with Krishna. And if one follows in the footsteps of these devotees, Krishna is available. Although the Nitya Siddha expansions of Krishna always remain with Krishna, if those engaged in Sadhan Siddhi follow in the footsteps of Krishna's Nitya Siddhas, such Sadhan Siddhas also can easily attain Krishna without difficulty. So to be Sadhan Siddha is a very high platform. That means Bhava Bhakti. That means that Uttam Adhikari, Mahabhagavat. But the person is still has a ways to go. That means that they can't enter into Brajalila until they are escorted by the eternal residents of Vrindavan, the Nityasiddha devotees. So that happened. Then, so they all walked again, hand in hand, singing songs that last morning on the way to the Jamuna. And that last morning, all the gopis felt a quivering in their left arm, their left thigh, and their left eye. They began to quiver. So this is very auspicious for ladies. It means something good will happen. And for men, it's the right side. And if ladies have quivering in the right side, it's inauspicious. And similarly for men, if they have on the left side, it's inauspicious. Then you know something bad will happen. That's a fact. So they came there to fulfill their last vow, and they were playing in the water. And Krishna knew everything about the gopis' desires. So he came there with four friends, with Sudam, Vasudam, Kinkini, and Sridam. And Sridam, Sudam, Sridam, Vasudam, and Kinkini. And they actually represent Krishna's subtle body, his mind, intelligence, his heart, and ego. So, and those boys were asking, where are you taking us? And he said, just come on. Where are we going? Where are we going? Come on, come on. And he kind of went to this place, a special place in the back of the Jamuna by a kadamba tree. Sanatana and Jiva Goswami, they've written that these boys were about 4 or 5 years old. And Kavi Karnapur further describes that they were the same group that herd the cows with Krishna. and that they were going to be with Krishna that day. But Krishna Chakravarti Thakur, better if you sit there. Krishna Chakravarti Thakur describes that his opinion is that they were only 2 or 3 years old. That means that they weren't even able to discriminate between a girl and a boy. And he describes that they were just, that they left the village naked, as in the usual manner of village boys who are 2 years old and 3 years old. And that they loved Krishna so much that when he left in the morning, that they couldn't tolerate his separation, so they just followed him. So in either case, the boys were a little bit younger, and so Krishna took younger boys so that the young girls would not feel embarrassed for what he was planning to do. So he took them there, and they were kind of hiding in the bushes. And Krishna took on the mood of a transcendental thief. He first tucked his hair up in his turban, and he hiked up his dhoti, like when you're going to serve prasad or something. And he took off his ankle belts, and he gave a stern look to his friends who were giggling, the young boys. And cast mysterious glances back and forth, and started to sneak through the bushes. Yes. So he came up to the place where the gopis were. And looked there. And they were, and the clothes were very close to the bank and in open view, hardly. But Krishna was very expert and snuck behind the tree and took their clothes, put on his shoulder, and then snuck away without their even seeing anything. They didn't notice. And then he came back to the boys and they were giggling. Shh! Quiet! Purna Shanti Panaya Rakhiye. Be quiet. And then they all climbed up into the Kadamba tree. And then the gopis were just innocently playing in the water. And then suddenly they noticed, hey, where were our clothes? Who took our clothes? Our clothes are gone. But no one has come. There's no footprints there. Just some birds. But one gopi said, well, perhaps it was a demigod. Because we've heard that when that demigods come to the earth, they don't step on the earth. Yeah, maybe it was them. And so they were just, their eyes went back and forth like safari fish looking, where are our clothes? And then Krishna and the boys were up in the tree. Krishna was listening to the talking. And at first, then Krishna and the boys started laughing. And the gopis could recognize Krishna's deep voice. And suddenly they lowered themselves in the water. And they just kept their eyes down. But then, feeling cold, they looked up, and then they saw that Krishna had shimmied out on the branch, now he was in full view. And when their eyes met, Krishna, his eyes became like a bumblebee tasting the lotus flower of the beautiful face of the gopis. Their faces were above the water. And the gopis, they became like chakora birds, getting the rays of Krishna's moon-like face. And this is where their eyes met. And so then Krishna started his divine joke. So he said, oh, girls of Raja, do you know who might have put these clothes up here in the tree? I was tending my cows from very far away, and I thought, what kind of new kadamba tree is this that has clothes as its fruits and flowers? Very curious to see this wonder, I quickly came here and climbed this tree. And the gopis said, all these garments belong to us, and don't speak like this. Surely you have stolen them and taken them up there. Why have you taken them so high on the branches of the kadamba tree? Krishna said, that may be true, but I, the thief, who am the son of Nanda Maharaj, reserve the right to make this accusation. It seems that you girls are on your way to Mathura to join King Kamsa. Krishna said, but our dear boy, please control your mind. Just look at these garments and consider whether they belong to boys or girls. Krishna said, well, indeed, intelligent girls, it does seem that they are ladies' garments. But does that mean that, what does it mean? Are you the only women in the world? Are there not others? The ladies said, dear boy, there are indeed others. But what other ladies beside us young gopis are here in this secluded place, in the forest? Krishna said, oh my dear young travelers to secluded places, why is it that you and no one else are playing in this secret place? And Gopi said, oh wise boy, we have come here for a different purpose, not to play. Rather, we have come here to worship Goddess Durga. And he said, so you are just worshippers of Durga? And they said, yes, nothing else. And he said, well then, foolish girls, you should know that Goddess Durga is worshipped here every midnight by demigoddesses who come here in their airplanes. And they Gopi said, that's all right. Let them do their worship, but why would these demigoddesses leave their clothing to the goddess Durga and then go away? Krishna replied, come now, girls. You do not understand the facts of the matter. They're coming back here this very night to worship her again. They have left their these clothes here to put on after they take their bath. The Gopi said, but our dear Krishna, you are the one who doesn't understand the facts of the matter here. All taking bath, they've been put here today by us who are going to perform worship. The garments have been taken and placed on the high branches of the tree by the presiding deity of this forest, which is Krishna, actually. So Krishna said, truly, if you each come here at your leisure and pick out your own garments from all of these, then taking a vow of confidence now, each of you offer some payment as retribution to me, to satisfy me, who have kept watch over your property, after all, then I will give the garments back to you, and then you can take them away. I said, we're not capable of coming there. He said, oh, girls, I know that because you're fatigued from your severe austerities, you cannot come here, but then I will not give you the clothes. And what can you do? Because I am stronger than you. And Gopi said, but we cannot trust your words because you are so duplicitous. And said, I vow that I am telling the truth, Krishna. I can see that you have become quite emaciated from your vows. And the Gopi said, but we cannot have faith in your word because you simply speak falsely. Krishna said, I cannot think of it any time that I have told a lie from my birth until now. And they said, what evidence do you have of this? And Krishna said, these young boys are witnesses, just ask them. They're very honest and they have good memories. They remember everything. The gopis objected. They said, but they know your intentions and they have adopted the same vocation as you, thief. So just throw the garments out here in the water or I'll send one of those young boys to bring them to us. Krishna said, come now, ladies. It's impossible for me to tell which garments are yours and which belong to another. So how can I just throw them to you? The gopis counted, and they said, such religious persons as us, we never even touch with our fingernails another person's property. And Krishna said, therefore, I say that you should come forward and pick out your own garments. Each finding your own garments, you may take them back. After all, I also have my own principles. I never give, take, or even touch another person's clothes. Therefore, I cannot give them to you. The gopi said, but out of fear that you will forcibly play some trick on us, we aristocratic maidens are not going to come near you. Krishna said, I have a suggestion. First, one of you who is less important may come forward. And when the rest of you see that I play no trick on her, then the rest of you may come safely approach. And the gopis were astonished how Krishna had so many arguments. They had finally met their match. He had an argument for every argument that they had. So they remained standing there in the water, looking like a row of beautiful blue lotus flowers, their heads popping up out of the Jamuna. So Krishna continued, said, "Oh, slender-waisted ones, since the head is considered to be the topmost limb, and your heads are indeed very beautiful, and since you're already showing them to me, then why be embarrassed to show me your other beautiful limbs in the middle?" The gopis were drowning in love with God, and they wondered that in order to satisfy this boyfriend of ours, what semblance of self-respect will remain with us? Externally, they were embarrassed, but they're still joking with themselves. One of them said, "Oh, lotus-eyed girl, he's calling you." Another one said, "Oh, thin-waisted wood girl, why don't you go?" And another said, "Oh, Sudamukhi, go on. He's making us drink nectar, so you should go first." So then they started whispering, "What are we going to do?" And one suggested, "Why don't you talk to him and defeat him with your clever words?" So one very bold gopi, probably Lalita Devi, she began speaking forward. She said, "Are you not the respected son of King Nanda, who's always instructing us in good behavior? Are you not the ocean of mercy, full of waves of compassion? And are you not the destroyer of ignorance, learned in the Shastras? Therefore, how could you perform such an unjust and abominable act as stealing our clothes? You should not do such things, because you are a most worshipable and famous person. This will not do you any good, but only bring infamy. So please, don't joke with us like this." Krishna said, "I know it's not proper to joke, especially with young ladies who are performing austere vows. When I said, 'Come and take your clothes,' I was not joking." The gopi said, "But you're famous as being very merciful. So why are you not showing us any mercy?" Krishna said, "Foolish girls, you don't understand. Since you should not even think of branding me with the stain of being unethical." The gopi said, "We may not know other persons in Braj, but we know you as the famous son of King Nanda. And we know that you are honored by every resident of Vrindavan and dear to them." Krishna said, "My dear, unintelligent girls, if I am indeed the son of the king, then how can you ascribe unethical behavior to me? And if you say that sometimes king's sons act immorally, then I say to you, how is it that I'm honored throughout all of Braj and dear to everyone? Surely it's not possible for those who are unethical to be given honor and affection. It's not logical." The gopi said, "True, but we're just women, and we don't know how to speak properly. Therefore, please forgive our offense and just give us back our clothes. We're trembling here." Shukadeva Goswami mentions at this point, gopis felt great love for Krishna, and Krishna also felt love for gopis. The gopis said, "Why don't you just leave our clothes on the bank and come away?" Krishna said, "But there's so many of you that you may take each other's clothes." They said, "But we're honest. We're not like you. We'll never take others' property." He said, "That's true. Somebody come and take your clothes. What's the difficulty?" When the gopis saw that Krishna was so determined, they felt ecstasy. Although they were embarrassed, they were very happy that they were getting so much attention from Krishna, because that's what they had prayed for. See, Krishna was joking with them just like a man jokes with his husband or his girlfriend. Right? So, a man jokes with his wife, or a boy jokes with his girlfriends. So that's what they wanted. And now they're getting all this attention from Krishna, so they felt so happy. But at the same time, they felt embarrassed. So these two feelings were there. They couldn't resist from joking with Krishna. And when they were in the water, they began to joke with one another. They said, "Come on, Saki, go on. You go first, and we'll see if he plays any tricks on you. And then we'll follow later." The other girl said, "Oh, no, you go first." And this was like nectar for Krishna's ears when he heard the gopis joking in such a way. The gopis were very loving and respectful to Krishna, but now Krishna was joking, so they entered into that mood and they began joking. So they giggled and they squinted at one another. Their lotus faces began to blossom under the warm rays of the Krishna sun. Krishna had captivated the gopis' minds with his sweet joking words. So they were shivering in the water, not just because it was cold, but out of great ecstasy and anticipation. So Krishna further joked. He said, "Oh, I'm getting tired now. I stayed up all night. So if you don't come and get your clothes now, I'm just going to string them together and make a hammock and take my stuff." The gopi said, "Oh, our dear Gopa, your cows have entered into cave. You should go and rescue them now." Krishna said, No. You come out now, gopis, because anyway, you should go home and perform your household duties. Don't become a disturbance to your parents." They said, "But our parents were the ones who told us to come here to perform these austerities for a whole month. We're not supposed to go home now." And Krishna said, "My dear austere ladies, I have also developed a desire to renounce family life. And I also want to stay for 1 month and perform austerities up here in the tree. But if you show your mercy to me, then I can come down and perform austerities with you and fast in your company." Gopi said, "Dear Krishna, don't be unfair. We know that you are the respectable son of Nanda, and it's fitting for us to have a service attitude towards you. Besides, you're very dear to us, so please return our clothes. We're shivering. And besides, it's only because you're so beautiful that we've become your maidservants, and we'll do whatever you ask of us. So please give us back our clothing. By stealing the property of women and seeing them naked, you'll incur our dharma. And if you don't give us our clothes, we'll go to the king and tell him." Now the gopis didn't specify whether they're talking about Nanda or Kamsa. So they thought, anyway, whoever Krishna's more afraid of, let him think of that king. But they had no intention of telling on Krishna, but they wanted to scare him a little. So Krishna thought, even though they're just young girls, they have performed such a difficult feat. But there's still something more difficult that I want them to do. I want to see the power of their love for me. So the Lord was smiling and thought, "Oh, you have acknowledged your servitude toward me with your own mouth. Now I'm going to test your words. And if you can come out of the water, then I will return your garments to you along with my very life and soul." Krishna said, "If you are actually my maidservants and you'll really do what I say, then simply come and take your clothes. If you don't come here, then I won't give them. And if even the king becomes angry, what can he do anyway?" So the gopis saw Krishna was undefeatable and he was so determined. So they realized there was no alternative. They concluded, "Alas, oh my friends, we have been defeated by our own words. If we delay any longer, some other man may come along, and then we'll enter deep into the ocean of mortification. Besides, our desire for Krishna's association has become very strong, and that desire will not even allow us to drown ourselves here in the Jamuna, which we would have done over a million times to avoid this embarrassment. So, therefore, let us force ourselves to go forward to our beloved, laying our embarrassment down on the ground. We will fold our hands in supplication, and closing our eyes, cover our own bodies with darkness by closing our eyes. Come, let us now leave the water and go on to the shore." The others agreed, "Yes, there's nothing else we can do. We must come out." Therefore, they all slowly rose up from the water, covering their private parts. In that posture, they were shivering, and they were bending over. Their hair was wet, and it was hanging down, so that was covering them, most of them. And they hunched over in a way so that Krishna wouldn't see their naked beauty. They made some of the younger, shorter girls go first. And they tried to hide behind that. And they were restlessly glancing back and forth, so embarrassed. They came out of the water, but they couldn't move forward because of their feeling of morality was holding them back, even though they had Krishna praying. That feeling of modesty was restraining them from coming forward to Krishna. So when Krishna saw how embarrassed they were and how their purity was being exhibited, he was deeply impressed by their pure love. And he saw their innocence and their purity. So then out of love for them, he placed their clothes on his shoulder. And then he said, "I have so much respect for you that I have placed your undergarments on my shoulder." And a war was waging inside of the hearts of the gopis. One of shyness was holding them back, and their desire to be with Krishna was pulling them forward. So it was like a tug of war inside of their hearts. They were like suspended, but raging war inside of their hearts. Krishna said, "Oh, Sakis, why are you afraid of me? You're standing there in a confused state, as if you're not attracted to me at all. How is it possible for you to cover yourself? Because I'm sitting up here in the tree, I can see everything anyway. But on the pretext of morality, you're trying to cheat me. Now, don't just stand there in one group. Stand in a straight line and come before me. And if you follow my instructions, it would be very easy for you to get your clothes back." So they were so embarrassed. But they were overwhelmed with love and respect for Krishna. So they gradually moved a little closer to Krishna. Krishna said, "It's very inauspicious that you're standing there with your hair hanging loose, especially for religious girls. Even ordinary ladies tie their hair in a braid. Therefore, tie your hair in a braid. Be religious." The gopis heard Krishna's firm words. Their affection for him increased 1,000 times. They gradually came closer to him. Their bodily hair stood up in ecstasy, and they laughed nervously. Krishna said, "Ladies, this is not proper conduct for persons performing religious vow. A person is performing a vrata should never bathe in the water, into the river, naked. In this way, you have offended Varunadeva and Jamunadeva. You have made these offenses." The gopis tried to cover themselves with their hands because they were so embarrassed. But Krishna wanted them to completely surrender to them. So seeing them feeling remorse, discolored, and their flaccid limbs, they were very weak from their fasting, and they were in the water, very cold water, for a long time. So he thought, I shouldn't allow them to leave their bodies. So then he spoke very mercifully. He said, "Dear emaciated girls, do not fear. Your eyes are moving back and forth like chakora birds, so do not argue, just hear my words. I can remove all of your offenses. I am for you at present, like Narayan. Therefore, placing yourself before me, you should offer your pranamas to eradicate this offense. So just follow my order. I will mitigate all of your sins. Do not worry. And if you do it with great faith and devotion, you will receive your desired results in many ways. So now, you should offer your obeisances, joining your palms together and placing them over your head." They tried to offer their pranams by only bowing their heads down. But Krishna didn't accept that. He said, no. You have to use your hands. So then, because the ladies were covering themselves, so then they tried to offer obeisances with one hand. And Krishna chanted the verse, "Eka hasta pramanaha," saying, "This is offering obeisances with one hand is not acceptable." Then they joined their hands together, but they kept them down as to continue to cover themselves. And then Krishna said, "No, above your heads now." So the gopis were looking at each other back and forth, and they were a little nervous, and they wished, what is he going to do next? Is he going to play another trick on us? They felt so embarrassed. And they said, if we don't do it as he says, then our vrata may be destroyed. So they were looking shyly, and then they thought, our vow cannot go in vain. Rather, let all of our codes of family and class religion be destroyed, and let our shame be destroyed. Then with half-closed eyes, they placed their hands over their heads like toy dolls controlled by Krishna. And they pacified Krishna by standing very humbly with their heads hanging down. Krishna was thinking, in surrender to me, they have given up their shyness in such a way that is even worse than death for aristocratic girls. Then Krishna's heart melted like butter, and a sweet smile appeared on his lips. He said, oh, you have greatly pleased me, and I feel so much love for you. Now dress yourself in your clothes. May you all drown in the ocean of love of God. Seeing them humbly bow down, the Supreme Personality of Godhead returned their clothes to them. So we must also surrender to Krishna with our body, mind, and words. The gopis agreed to be completely controlled by Krishna because they loved him so much. And in doing so, they in turn controlled Krishna. If any devotee allows himself or herself to be controlled by Krishna as the Lord's puppet, then he or she will in turn also control and conquer the Lord, because that is the Lord's nature. He's actually conquered and controlled by love. And Krishna's Kaviraj writes a very beautiful Sanskrit verse in Govinda Lilamrita making this point. Ushno rivi shitala eva chandra sarvam sahabhus chapana samira sadhu sudhiram bhunidhir gavira sopavato prema vashodi krishna. The verse says, just as the sun is naturally very warm, and just as the moon is naturally very cool, just as the earth is naturally very tolerant, and just as the wind is naturally restless, just as the sadhus are naturally grave, and just as the ocean is naturally very deep, similarly, Krishna is also naturally controlled by love. So the gopis had been conquered, but now They had conquered Krishna. Prabhupada writes in his Krishna book, the gopis were all simple souls, and whatever Krishna said, they took to be true. In order to be freed from the wrath of Varuna, as well as to fulfill the desired end of their vows, and to ultimately please their worshipful Lord Krishna, they immediately abided by his order. Thus they became the greatest lovers of Krishna, and his most obedient servitors. Nothing can compare to the Krishna consciousness of the gopis. And this is stated also in the famous verse by Mishma Chakravarti, Aradya Bhagavan, Arjesha Tanayas, Padama Vindalana, Ravya Kashit Pasana, Rajavadu, Bhagavanya Kalpika. That our worshipable Lord is the son of Nanda Maharaj, and his abode is Vrindavan. And the highest worship of Krishna is performed by the gopis of Vrindavan. So although they were totally cheated, ridiculed, and utterly embarrassed, they didn't feel inimical towards Krishna. Rather, they were overjoyed with the association of their beloved, and even though he acted so in such a way. So when one is considered dear, then whatever one does is appreciated by the beloved, even if it gives pain. So this is the mood of the gopis. They're the purest servants of the Lord, and Lord Chaitanya glorified them in his Shikshastika prayers. Ashlisha Bhaparatam Panashtama Adarshana Marmakatam Karotuva Yatata Dava Vadadatuvam Kato Matpana Natas Tusaeva Nampara. Whether you embrace us, or whether you trample us, or whether you neglect us completely and we never see you, still you are a worshipful Lord of our lives, because you can do whatever you like and we still love you. So this is the nature of the exalted nature of the gopis' love for Krishna. Such a high kind of love. So they were willing to be put in such an embarrassing situation. And even though they were so embarrassed, gradually that embarrassment, which is their feeling of morality, was actually conquered by their prema. Because by seeing Krishna, hearing his words, his joking, and coming closer to him, gradually the purvaraga, which was in their heart, gradually began to blossom into a full lotus of prema bhakti. And that became more powerful and conquered their feelings of shame and morality. The conventional religious feelings which were holding them back, now that was broken by the prema bhakti, which became more powerful. See, we have to actually think, who were these gopis? In their previous lives, they were these great rishis in the Dandaka forest, or the personified Vedas, Rishichari gopis, or Shrutichari gopis, or the daughters of demigods, Devakanya gopis. And they were there, these rishis, they were very strict, austere sages living in the forest. And they met Lord Ramachandra. They were performing their worship there, their meditation, and Lord Ramachandra came. When they saw Lord Ram, they thought, oh, he's so beautiful. And their feelings of conjugal love, which they were cultivating, became very strong. Lord Ramachandra understood their hearts without them even saying anything. And then he blessed them that they would be able to fulfill their desires with him in his next lifetime. But because now he had taken a vow of only one life, but in his next life they could fulfill their desires. So those rishis were now standing naked before God. And before, their morality was so strong, but now the higher prema dharma had taken over their hearts and had broken through their feelings of shame and embarrassment from Krishna. So, of course, Krishna devotees do not promote immorality at any time, but they also know that pleasing Krishna is more important than following any other rules of religion. So the gopis were standing naked before the Lord. So it's not so easy to stand naked before God. They gave up everything. And we also have to come to this type of level. We have to give up our attachments to material things. We have to give up our false ego and our pride. We have to give up subtle things like just our enjoying propensity, or our plans for security, or we have to give up our fear and our embarrassment. All of these things have to be given up in order to actually come before God and fully take His association. So, by Krishna, associating with Krishna, they were captivated. They became more attracted to him than ever. Their glances became fixed on Krishna. After they put their clothes on, they didn't just go home. Actually, they couldn't move because they were stunned with prema bhakti and ecstatic love. Their legs wouldn't move. They were stunned. They just stood there, totally captivated by Krishna. And they remained shyly glancing at him. They were more humble now in front of Krishna than they were before. Why? Because now they could see that Krishna was also attracted and attached to them, just as they were attached to Krishna. And that made them feel humbled. They thought that, oh, Krishna also loves us. This can only be by the mercy of Katyayani. Because why would he love us? They are so humble. But now they saw that Krishna loved them, so that made them feel even more humble. So their shyness was previously driven out by Krishna far away. But now that shyness came back even stronger because they saw that Krishna was attracted to them, that made them shy. And their shyness entered their eyes and they were just shyly glancing up at Krishna. And then they would look away and then glancing at him. Now they had dressed themselves in their clothes, but they couldn't move. They were just glancing at Krishna in such a way. So Krishna had not simply stolen the clothes of the gopis, but he has actually stolen their hearts. And the stealing of the clothes was just a pretext. It was the medium of their surrender, so that they could fully surrender to Krishna and develop their love. The fact that they were young girls, and then they were naked in a secluded place with Krishna, was just the circumstantial medium of the exchange of their surrender to Krishna. It was a secondary feature of this pastime. Although any man in that situation would become lusty, but Krishna's never lusty. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Krishna tested the gopis' love and made it come out from their hearts. So Krishna was not interested in any material sexual affairs. He was only interested in what was inside their hearts. The gopis said, "O Krishna, we now obtain the fruit of our vow, because after you have created this frog and driven the very life air out of our bodies, again, by your grace, we have become fully satisfied. Please speak whatever you desire to say, and after hearing from you, then we'll go home." So, at this point, the cowherd boys who were still there, they said, "Hey, there's nothing more for us to do here. Come on, let's go." And they grab each other by the cloth and the belt and hands, and they pull each other, and they're joking, and they left. Then now we're speaking romantic words. No place for that. They wanted to go. So Krishna knew about the great determination it took for the gopis to perform this great austerity. So he said to them, "I have performed this leela to increase your love for me. By ordering you harshly, I tested your love for me. Attracted to me, you submissively obeyed my order. Thus I have manifested eternal love in your heart. I reciprocate differently with different people of this world. The desire of those who fix their minds on me does not lead to material desire for sense gratification. No, never. Just as barleycorns burned by the sun can never sprout. So if a pure-hearted person displays such an intense desire for me, then I will transform that desire into prema." And he continued. He said, "Whatever worship of me is done, although it may be insubstantial, or although it may be improper, due to duplicity even, still it's fit to become true by my arrangement, since I have transcendental qualities. And even if such imperfect worship can become successful, then what to speak of your worship, ladies? Your worship of me is so exalted and pure. O saintly girls, I knew that your real motive was to worship me and focus simply on my happiness. Even though you have not stated this because of your shyness, that desire is approved by me and it will come to pass. Because of your purity, it must come true. Since you are intent simply upon my happiness, and I myself am under the control of your love. Therefore, what is impossible in such a case? So now, you should return to your homes. Your desire is fulfilled because you will enjoy with me in the coming nights, so that the gopis cried tears of happiness. And they could return home only with great difficulty. Their desires were now fulfilled because Krishna had promised them that you will enjoy with me in the coming nights. So Indian girls will never spend the night with anyone except for their husbands. So now it became very clear that they were all Krishna's wives, that they were married to Krishna. So they would dance together in the Rasa dance in the near future. That was his promise. So this was kind of like their initiation into the Rasa dance. And the gopis were able to enter into the Rasa dance through this lila. So this lila is very important, actually. Any devotee who's entering into Braja Lila in Madhurya Ras will go through this pastime and be tested by Krishna. Because one cannot enter into Rasa dance until this pastime takes place. See? So it has great significance. In chapter 29, the Rasa dance begins. So we can see the depth of this pastime. And actually, all of the Braja Leelas have very deep significance, a lot more than we can imagine. See, we can see there's different levels of Dharma being discussed. Krishna broke their attachment to a conventional morality by increasing the prema in their hearts, which was just flowering from Purvarag, and he made it blossom into a fully blossomed lotus of prema. In Mahabharata, we see that Krishna, he preaches, Krishna arranges that the different devotees, sometimes they have to cross beyond their level of dharma. Like Yudhisthira, for example, you know, he mentioned, he ordered Yudhisthira to tell a lie. And Yudhisthira never told a lie before. It was so difficult for him to do that. But that was his surrender to Krishna. Right? In that circumstance, because there was a lot of cheating going on the battlefield, and Krishna wanted to stop Drona, who was slaughtering all of the Pandava army. And he knew that Drona is very attached to his son, Ashwatthama. So he said, just tell that Ashwatthama's dead. Because he'll know that you never tell a lie. And then he'll be devastated. And then we'll stop him like that. Krishna's so tricky, right? He wanted to break some of the lower levels of morality to get up to a higher level of Dharma. Because he's Dharma personified. And it's his opinion which counts. So he saw that this was actually religious. Whereas telling the truth would have been irreligious. So Yudhisthira hesitated, but still, reticently still, you know, spoke this lie. We see a similar pastime when the Trigartha army had taken Arjuna away. And when Karna was wreaking havoc in the Pandava army, when he came back, he saw that his brother Yudhisthira was not there. This was the core of a plan, to get rid of Arjuna and then capture Yudhisthira. And in this way they would defeat the Pandavas. So when Arjuna came back, he saw his brother was not there, so he was worried, where is he? Oh, he's in the tent, in the back lines. Arjuna immediately went to the back lines to see his brother, went into the royal tent, saw his brother lying there. Oh, you're all right. And Yudhisthira looked up and said, oh, Arjuna, you're here. Did you kill Karna? You killed him? And Arjuna said, no, I just came to see you, see if you're all right. He said, what? You left the battlefield without killing Karna? How could you have done that? He's killing all of our troops. What kind of warrior are you? Better you give your Gandiva bow to a real Kshatriya. And, right, so Arjuna had vowed that anyone who would even mention that he gives his bow to someone else, that he would need to kill the person. So he put his hand on his sword. And Krishna looked at him and said, "What are you doing? Are you mad?" He said, "I made a vow that I will kill the person." He said, "But he's your brother. He's your elder brother. He's to be worshipped like your father. And not only that, he's the king, Naradev. And furthermore, he's a Kshatriya who's wounded and he's unarmed. You cannot kill him. What about all of those garments, Arjuna?" And then Arjuna said, "Well, what will I do about my vows? Please listen." So, once there was a sage named Kaushikata, and he made a vow to always tell the truth, never lie. Once he was in front of his hermitage, and some innocent villagers ran past in terror into the forest. Moments later, there are some dacoits with evil in their eyes, following with knives, looking, you know, with blood in their eyes. And they asked him, "Where are those villagers? Where did they go this way into the forest, in this path?" And he didn't know what to say, because he had vowed to tell the truth. "But if I tell the truth, these men will kill these innocent villagers. What should I do?" So, yes, they went that way. He had no time to consider. So the dacoits followed the villagers and killed them. And Kaushikata went to hell for telling the truth. Yeah. Because in that circumstance, that truth caused such severe pain to innocent people that telling the truth was not the dharmic, was not religious. So dharma is difficult to understand. And one has to understand all the various levels. Now, Krishna is the personification of dharma. So he understood that, okay, these persons have already proved themselves on this level. Now let them come on to the higher level and prove themselves. I want to see how much they love me, how much they're willing to give up and sacrifice for me. That's real prema, real prema dharma. And that's real religion. This is the kind of religion that we're in. You know, this is our tradition. The gopis have set the highest standard of surrender for all devotees of God, for all time in history to come. There will never be any devotees who are more surrendered and more religious than the gopis. Ramya Kashyap Upasana Vrajavadu Bhaginiya Kalpita. There's no way to worship God higher than the gopis of Vrindavan. We may read this pastime and see it in a kind of external way. Oh, the gopis are naked. Oh, Krishna's teasing them. And he's, right, stolen their clothes. And of course, non-devotees, they think of it in a completely mundane way. But we may also see it in a somewhat external way. I think, oh, I shouldn't read this pastime because it's a little bit... But the girls were 5 years old. How could it be more innocent and pure? And Krishna was, even if you look at on the material platform, they were, right, way before puberty. And Krishna is God. He has no lust. He's just concerned about the pure love in the heart. That's why he performed this pastime, to make this love come out so that the people of the world will see what kind of love his highest devotees have for him. This is why he did this. And during the Rasa Leela, he performed similar pastime by disappearing and then reappearing. And then everyone sees how much the gopis love Krishna. They never curse him. They never criticize him. And they never feel animosity towards him. They just love him. That's their nature. They're completely covered by prema. So by hearing about this, it helps to clear away our lust, because it's pure love. And the gopis, Shukadeva Goswami, at the end of the Rasa Leela, He mentions Vikriditam, Vrajabhadubhir Edam Chavishnu, Shadam Pito, Nishamayet, Nitamarna Yitya, Bhakti Param, Bhagavati Pratilam Yakamam, Ridrovam Asha Pahino, Kacharain Adira. Beautiful verse. Vikriditam, Vrajabhadubhir Edam Chavishnu. That by hearing the playful pastimes of Krishna with the ladies of Vrindavan, one can very quickly rid rovam ashapahinoti, purify vidinoti, adunoti. You can purify the heart of rid rovam kamam, the disease of lust in the heart. Very quickly, achirena dhira, he quickly becomes very sober, because he can see what is real love. Compared to material lust, which is so selfish, so lusty, low class, compared iron like gold, then the devotee will never be attracted to these things when he sees what is real love. Huh? And if any boy would do this to some girls, could they ever possibly still surrender in such a submissive way? No. They would be so angry for being embarrassed. So this purifies the heart from our own lust and gives us a taste of real love and devotion and to help us develop Vrajabhakti, which is the goal of our religion, our tradition. So we'll stop now. And if you have some questions, you can ask them. Yes.
How, because Krishna wants us to step up to the next level by our surrender, then how do we know how to do that according to where we're at? Like, how do we know, where does that come from?
Well, generally one requires, that's why one requires a spiritual master or spiritual masters to give one direction. Either Diksha and Shiksha gurus can be many. They generally point the way, what is the level and what is the next step. But with one's intelligence, one can also try to understand what that is and then maybe get confirmation from others. Because if you know scripture very well, then you can understand your position and what is your next step. But in any case, one would still be desirous of confirmation. Because there's so many levels of dharma. And even within our, Kanishta Adhikari, Bhajana Kriya, Anishtita, Nishtita, Anartanya Vritti, Nishta Ruchi, Asanti, all different levels have different ways to perform sadhana. And within Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, there's different recommendations for what is vidhi and what is nisheda.
What is nisheda?
Nisheda means prohibition. And vidhi means rule. You should do this, and do's and don'ts, basically. Means. Right? For all different yoga systems, there's do's and don'ts. And for in bhakti yoga, there's, on the different levels, there's different do's and don'ts also. Basically, the main do is hear and chant practitioner. That's the main. And within Varnashram, brahmacharis, vihastas, vanaprasthas, sannyasis, brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishnavas, they all have different do's and don'ts. So according to that, basically, you can figure out what you're to do. But for maybe more specific direction, one can get instructions from advanced senior Vaishnavas.
Bhagavan Chakravarti was a disciple of Adita Acharya. Often devotees, they call Bhagavan Chakravarti Thakur. But actually, I read it's written Mashwinath Chakravarti. It's not the same.
Yeah. So, they're both Acharyas. Prabhupada said also Vishwanath a few times, but I also read what you're saying.
In the book of Rohini Mountain,
right.
In the companion.
Yeah, I'm aware of this. Prabhupada sometimes said Vishwanath, one or the other. About the class?
All the gopis were standing before, naked before God. They were all the incarnations of the sage of Brahma.
Not all, but some. Some were Shuddhichari gopis, some Devakali gopis. And then later the Nityasiddha gopis joined them. You see, because those other ladies were a little bit Radhika and her friends were 1 year older, a little bit older, and they, it's understood that they were already betrothed in marriage, so they didn't perform. They were the married gopis, and these were the unmarried gopis. But they invited those ladies to kind of celebrate their Avabrita Snan, the ceremonial bath, which was the last day. But it has a deeper significance, as I mentioned.
Did these gopis go on to marry someone else after they accepted Krishna as their husband at this time? Or did they just remain?
According to Jiva Goswami, they didn't. Then Krishna left and they remained unmarried. Dhanisaki and her friends. And at the end of Gopal Champo, he mentions that Krishna comes back and marries them. And Radhika and all of her friends too.
Is it a mass marriage?
Yeah, mass marriage. And it was understandable by the Vrindavasis that Danya and her friends could marry Krishna because they were never married. But they were a little shocked when someone suggested that Radharani and her friends would marry Krishna too. Why not them too? And everyone thought, well, wait a minute, they're already married and they've been married for years. And I mean, how could that be? That's not right. It's not moral. But actually what happened was Yogamaya, or Purnamasi, came forward and she said, no, actually, Radhika's not married. And they said, what? How could be? And she said, yes, I created doubles of all of those, of Radhika and her friends, and it was those doubles that were married. But Radhika actually never married. And they said, oh, come now. And she said, yes, now we'll call all the gopis. And they had a big assembly. They called all the gopis together. And then she said, whoa, they're not all here. There's some still in the homes. And they called them all out. And then all of the doubles came. Two Radharanis, two Vishakas, two Galitas, two Chitras, Chambakalata, all. And everybody was like dumbfounded. Wow, what's that, you know? And then Purnamasi said, all right, so now you try to pick out which is the real one and which is the double. And they couldn't do it. So then in this way she proved to all the Vrindavasis that actually Radhika had never been married and it was proper and chaste for Krishna to marry her and her friends also along with Danya and her gopis. So actually Danyasaki and her friends never married, either externally or internally. And they, Krishna, you know, then they arranged for Krishna to marry everyone.
What was the purpose of creating the doubles?
The
doubles.
so that everybody would think that they are married. And the gopis themselves, it was just to make everything seem as normal. But the doubles, they never appeared along with the other one. They always somehow, there was only one of them always in view. None of the doubles would come together.
So this looks like a perfect setting for the scene that Jiva Goswami states that actually in the spiritual world, in Golok Vrindavan, the gopis are all in Swakya Rasa. And Vishan Chakrati.
Swakya.
And Vishan Chakrati, the Thakur states that they're Parakya Rasa even in the spiritual world. So how do you reconcile?
Well, Jiva Goswami doesn't say that they're in Swakya Rasa in the spiritual world. He never says that.
That's what I read in Krishna.
He does mention Swakya Rasa, that in one sense the gopis are all married to Krishna because he is the supreme husband of everyone. So in that sense, they're all his wives. But every time he mentions in Gopal Champo anything about Swakya Rasa, he also adds something as a kind of disclaimer or qualifier. So that, so this married mood is there. But for those who have like an eye to see, can understand that there's something more. Like this, in this way, he kind of presents Swakya Rasa, because Prabhupada explained that he had some disciples that had that mood of love. So he tried to encourage them. And at the same time, that he was concerned that in the future people would misconstrue the Parakya Rasa. So he wanted to, he didn't want people to think that Krishna and the gopis were immoral, which is common today, as you all know. So as a kind of safety valve, he up front presented the Swakya Rasa, the married relationship. But for those who have an eye to see, every time he gives a little disclaimer at the end, that this is ultimately not the real situation. So that the gopis, even after they get married, they feel a little disappointed because it's not quite as relishable as it was before when they were sneaking around and like this. So then they make a statement that actually before it was more tasty and it was more delicious. And now we're married to Krishna, but it's not the same. It's not quite the same. So that way at the end of this Leela, Jiva Goswami reveals this. And so those who are Gaudi Vaishnavas feel great relief from reading that statement at the end, because then they know that, yes, Parakya Rasa, that's the highest. And that's what's in the spiritual world.
One time, last year, I walked into a major bookstore in Montreal, and it was accompanied by one Bhakta I was cultivating, who he's an international speaker, and he tries to introduce some basic concepts of Krishna consciousness in a kind of covert way to the masses. Mm-hmm. And so I noticed there was one large copy book type book sitting amongst the books, and I opened it up. And it was full of erotic type paintings of Lord Krishna, this pastime, and many others. And I said with disgust to him, this is really sick. They're really misrepresenting Krishna. They're portraying him as a lusty playboy. And my friend said, no, he said, you shouldn't look at it that way. This, for many people, this will be like their introduction to Krishna consciousness. And he was trying to see the positive aspect of it. And I was just wondering if you could comment, please.
Comment on this phenomenon.
Well, do you think he was off for thinking, no, there's still some good here, even though Krishna is being, you know, presented in it.
Well, that's hard to say. Generally, Prabhupada didn't appreciate this. Also was disgusted with this kind of paintings. So, in general, I would feel the same, I think, more or less. I mean, you know, we know how to preach more than someone like him. If people get the wrong impression right from the very beginning, it's not a good, you know, foot forward onto the spiritual path. So it's better, I mean, there are paintings which portray this and other pastimes of the gopis which are not erotic or sexual looking. And those paintings would be better if they are distributed, you know, presented to show this pastime. Because, you know, it's like, of all the religious scriptures on the earth, the Bhagavatam is the highest. And of all the pastimes, the Vraja Leelas are the highest. And of all the devotees in Vrindavan, the gopis, are the most pure, most surrendered, most selfless, and exalted devotees. So then, it should have a very high class presentation. You know, like pristine, religious, pure, should be very aristocratic. There's cheap, low-class paintings, you know, of gopis with breasts coming and then looking at Krishna. Krishna's lusty. You know, it's very cheap. So better those things aren't presented, I think. Regularly, he goes to Mathura from Goloka Vrindavan, he goes to Goloka Mathura, and he kills Kamsa and then he comes back.
So how
regularly. And then each time the residents forget about the previous time. It's like always ever fresh, like the first time he's ever done it.
So is there actually a pastime in the spiritual world where he actually meets Kamsa and kills him?
Yeah. There aren't. Kamsa is a devotee.
I thought Krishna never kills in the spiritual world, that he has to come here to exercise that sporting capacity.
Generally, yeah.
Generally.
But if you read the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you'll see this. Yeah. It must be like a play. Because obviously, first of all, he's not a demon. Second of all, he doesn't have a mature body, so he can't be killed. So it's a devotee playing the role of Kamsa, and Krishna plays like he kills him. And he plays like he's dead. And then he comes back to Vrindavan. And then Kamsa gets up and starts doing his, you know, nonsense again. And then Krishna has to go again and kill him. Something like that.
Krishna who kills the demon is not
Swayamrup
Krishna, but Vasudev Krishna.
So no. That's in Bhoma Leela.
But in the world
of Vrindavan,
actually,
the
Swayamrup Krishna goes and kills
Kamsa. I believe that's not. What is the difference between Satis and Vrindavan? I have recently that even Vrindavanis were married. I thought they were just much younger girls who would not be married and who had a completely different vision, and that's why they could be assisting education in the most intimate pastimes. But recently I heard that they actually are Vrindavanis who are married. And
what, in Bhoma
Leela? Because I thought that Vrindavanis
In Bhava Lila, there's a kind of Mayic husband. And so they're illusory husbands created by Yoga Maya. So in Bhava Lila, that's the situation. And in Nitya Lila, there's no husbands. That's just a concept that they're married. So, in any case, they're not really married. And even the Sakis. But their approach to serving is through Radharani. They serve Radharani. That's all the interest to serve. But you don't really hear very much or anything about they have a husband or they have any relationship. I've read so many, such Goswami literature, and they never say anything about any such husbands of mantras. Doesn't mention that in the Gopal Champa. It doesn't describe it. What happens next?
What does it lead into?
Well, that's kind of like the end, the happy ending.
You see,
they're married and they stay in Vrindavan and then enjoy it together. Yeah, they go in the forest and they dance and they do the same things.
He makes his promise to him that in the future we'll be getting together more often.
Yeah, but that's here he's just talking about the next year's rasa dance.
Oh.
He says in the coming nights we'll enjoy this. Kind of referring to that. Perhaps. But yes, then when they get tired, then they just have their own rasa dance. The gopis feel a little bit more embarrassed because then everybody in the village kind of knows what's going on. So they feel not quite the same about it.
Does these passages repeat themselves? Because it seems that Krishna, like he does at pastime at the age of 5 or 6 or 7, or whatever, 8, he has 6, I think. And then, he does that pastime again, but same age, like,
just
go, like, it's kind of hard to understand time in the spiritual world.
Not exactly.
Like, if this pastime happens when Krishna is
6 years old.
6 years old. But does that pastime happen again? Because
keeping
if it's
6 years old.
What?
Not is he keeping 6 years old?
Not in that manifest time. But in another universe.
Because in Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna has eternal pastimes. But it seems
seems that this person to cure, okay, as person when he's young, a person when he's older, like, it seems that there's a time frame. But how does this time frame fit into eternality?
Well, in the spiritual, Krishna's a Nitya Kishore. He's eternally 15 years old, 9 months, and 7.5 days old. So there, he plays different lilas, but he has no janmasthami, no birth pastimes, or like very small baby pastimes. Doesn't have like Trinavarta, this kind of thing. Doesn't have these small baby pastimes. That's why Krishna comes to the earth, not only to exhibit them for the people of this world, but also so that Nanda and Yashoda can enjoy, you know, Krishna's birth, cuddling him as a, you know, 1 month or 2 month, 3 month child. Because then the child is very helpless and completely dependent on the parents, so it's very nice for those in Vatsalyabhava who have a protective mood. So Nanda and Yashoda come to the earth to experience those. And it's not like they know that they're getting transported down to the earth, and you know what I mean? They're not aware of this. And they just perform the pastime system. So the pastimes, all of them don't occur like the ones that... These are called naimittic pastimes, occasional pastimes. And they happen here on the earth, the Boma Leelas. They're mixed, it's a mixture, like Rasa Leela, that's Nitya Leela. And that happens in Goloka Vrindavan and also is enacted on the earth. But there's many pastimes here, like killing the demons, taking birth, and like this, that these are not eternal pastimes, these are called naimittic leela here and nitya leela there. So there's different scriptures. The scriptures of nitya leela are for Ashtakaliya leela smaranam, like Krishna Bhavanamrita, Govinda Leelamrita, and so forth, just describing the Ashtakaliya leela. Krishna, one book was just published. I read the Kavi Kanpur is Krishna Kainaka. So those describe, those are for devotees who already liberated, and they're beyond Anartanirviti, they're beyond even Nishna. And they're cultivating their mood of love for Krishna by hearing, chanting, and remembering all of Krishna's pastimes always throughout the entire day. And the naimittic pastimes are helpful for sadhakas like us who still have some anarthas to dispel. Like when we hear about Krishna killing demons, all of those demons, they represent different anarthas. And by hearing those naimittic pastimes, then we get free from those sins. And that's anarthas. So it's recommended for us to hear both pastimes. To hear the naimittic and the nitya leela. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, Gopal Champu, and Ananda Vrindavan Champu, and other books like that, they describe a mixture of naimittic and nitya leela. So that's like for us to read. And then later, when we're free from our anarthas, then we may read more of the nitya leela and meditate on those pastimes.
What's the symptoms of being free from anarthas? I mean, of course,
you have no no feelings of lust, attraction for sense gratification. The mind is very, very peaceful and can rest comfortably in the holy name without jumping like a monkey. You know, so there's many symptoms of this name.
Does this then mean that in the spiritual world, because you said that Krishna is going regularly or from time to time to Mathura to kill cancer, but these pastimes with the other demons, they do not take place?
What?
These pastimes, these early childhood pastimes like Putana, Bhakasura, Vasura, these demons?
Yeah, so, no, but, I mean, they have some like Keshi, he has Keshi. And Kaliya.
Oh, but I mean that,
like this.
Although those pastimes.
But Krishna's like, he's in Kishore pastime. So the ones when he's a baby, it doesn't kind of fit. So there's no Janmashtami in the very, very young pastimes. Because Krishna's Nitya Kishore.
But is he still there in the memory of the inhabitants? Or
yeah.
Although they do not
it seems so, because. In any case, they're always performing these eternally in the material world. On the earth, where in the universe where Krishna's time is vulnerable. So in this, what happens is the sons of Kuvera, Manigriva and Nala Kuvera, when they get liberated, when they see Krishna, they pray to him that they will always hear and chant his Vraja pastime. And he blesses them. So actually what happened is that after they go back to their Kuvera Loka, whatever this, and then they, you know, pass from their bodies, demigod bodies, they go back to the spiritual world in Kaloka Vrindavan. And they become the two Vandis, Marukanta and Snigdhakanta. And they recite the Boma Leelas for the eternal residents of Goloka Vrindavan. And those devotees in Goloka Vrindavan relish even more the Boma Leelas because they're so variegated and sweet, and then there's, you know, so many interesting things that happen. And they listen to those pastimes with great relish. And they cry and
but it may seem like that those pastimes, if they're not present in the spiritual world, it may seem like that the spiritual world is incomplete. Why?
No.
Because it's still the spiritual world. Like, either Krishna comes to the material world or the spiritual world, it's still the spiritual world. It's just
for
a
him.
Technical difference, yeah, mm-hmm. Just a technical difference for us to understand the science of.
Yeah.
No, but he's subordinate to time. So because he's only Nitya Kishore, he's spiritual, he wants to display his other pastimes, he has to come to the material world. It looks like he's subordinate to time, but it's not so.
Krishna's not subordinate to time. There's time is conspicuous by its absence. There's just eternal present in the spiritual world. In the material world, we are controlled by time. Because we are simply watching the past, the future, move past us in the present and then move into the past. There's no present here in this world. It's just the future, like the next minute, it's coming past us. And then it goes past us into the past. That's what we're living in. But in the spiritual world, there's only present. But there's still sequence of events. So it's a little bit difficult to conceive of. It's kind of like thinking of fire without heat or light. So Krishna arranges like this for some reason. That's just his arrangement. He he has Boma Leelas and he performs these Naimittic pastimes, like having a birth. And here the gopis have husbands, at least there's some form, but they're illusory forms. But in the spiritual, there's no husbands of the gopis. They're just some concept. And there's no birth pastime. So there's, you know, they're, but basically it's the same. There's just these very slight variations, very slight differences. But other than that, there's no difference between Boma Vrindavan and Goloka Vrindavan. So therefore, if he wants to perform these pastimes, he does them here. If he wanted to do them there, he could do them there. But he decided to do it like this.
Benefit of the celibates, of the people, mission souls.
That's one of the major considerations. And there, here, there's real demons, and he kills them, and they get liberation. But there, the demons like Kaliya and Keshi and Kamsa, they're not actually demons. They're devotees, and they're just playing a role. And the mood is different too, because then there, you look in Briya Bhagavatamrita, he you know, he fights with Kaliya, but then his hand extends and goes and, you know, grabs the gopis and pulls them onto Kaliya's head, and then he has Rasa dance on top of Kaliya's head. That doesn't happen in Boma Leela. So it's a whole different mood there. It's just like enjoying it. I mean, Krishna's also enjoying the Boma Leela too, but then there's, you know, demons are actually killing.
Extensions of the sat teacher, whereas the jivas, they come from the shit shakti, and he say the husbands of the gopis, they from the sat teacher, the existential aspect of the world. So they just stick into existence, and since they're not shit shakti, they don't mind being rejected.
Neglected.
Because they listen to sat, you know, like pure existence. So now they know that one. Because when they would ask him, well, don't they complain being so much neglected by their own wives? So management at home, because they're from the sat teacher, not from the sick shit-shaking,
I
guess.
And like the jivas are shit.
Yeah, they're not jivas, they're from the sat.
Yeah. Pure sat. They don't feel hurt.
They don't feel hurt. They just step into existential reality.
They're like moving mannequins.
Yeah. That explains the aloofness to the whole scene.
Yeah, that's true. And there's some more to be said about that. That they, because they're not envious of Krishna.
Yeah.
But then the reason is that because they think that they're always with their wives.
Yes.
But the spiritual forms of the wives are with Krishna. And they have the illusory forms of the gopis. So actually in the home there's an illusory form of a husband, an illusory form of a gopi. And the real, you know, the real thing, Krishna's dancing with the gopis. And those real forms think, oh, I have my husband, I'm here.
So it's some kind of magic.
It's true. The pastime is a lot more transcendental than we think.
I heard that Radha Rani has a husband, and that like that, is that
Abhimanyu? Yeah.
Is that like him too?
Him too, yeah. Yeah, he's actually the shadow of Krishna, personified. And the word Abhiman means conception. So he's not fully real. Thursday and Friday before you go. And just give it to me. Okay?
Isn't there three courses left? Thursday, Friday, and Saturday? Oh,
it's mentioned in the different Goswami grants, Krishna Bhavanami, Krishna Bhavanami, Ananda Vindavi Chakra. They always mention this sweet. And so the gopis always cook this for Krishna. I mean, the kale is one of his favorite sweets. I don't know how to cook it. Okay, cast your votes now, ladies and gentlemen. Either Gayatri Mantra, serious questions or topics on the book, questions and answers, and or.
What's your choice?
My choice. Well, I don't know if I say them. I don't want to spoil your freedom of democratic choice. You're right, please, on your vote, and it takes half more weight. Okay. If you cry, then it has even more weight. And then the last thing is just open questions and answers, open-ended.